Blog Talk Radio.
Psychiatrist in private practice since 2003. Dr. Carroll previously was the Director of Inpatient Services at the Bay Pines VA Hospital and the Bay Pines VA Medical Center. Dr. Carroll specializes in the treatment of children, 6 and older, and in the treatment of adults. She's also an all-time triathlete, so if you're having any problems in life, or if you're having any problems breaking through on that next level of athletics, and you need a little push, or you need a little help, give her a call. Her area code is 813-689-2466, or you can visit her at her office at 336 East Bloomingdale Avenue in Brandon, Florida. Well, guys, it's good to have both of you back tonight. Got a big night tonight.
Not quite as big as it was initially supposed to be, but yeah, Cinco de Mayo is still a big fight night.
Yep. Yep.
Like, you know, clenbuterol ruined it all.
Yeah. And then he went in for arthroscopic surgery, so that covered everything for him.
Yeah.
But before we get started, let's get an update on the famous Mr. Mel.
One day at a time. I haven't spoken to him today, but I will be calling him right after the show.
Great. Well, tell him that we're thinking about him. We still got him on the prayer line.
I shall.
Well, Z, what do you think about tonight's fight coming up with Triple G?
Well, it's interesting. You have he's facing Venice Matarossian, who's moving up from 154 pounds. I'm not sure. He hasn't fought in 2 years. Matarossian hasn't, and I'm not sure if he's even ranked as 154 pound, which I'm pretty sure he's not. With that said, it's a short fight, short notice fight. So that's understandable for both guys. I mean, Matarossian is supposed to take it. He's in some sort of shape. He's supposed to take it for the money. A lot of guys won't. O'Sullivan didn't understand that also. So, I mean, it's as far as the matchup goes, it's going to be what it is on paper. That's all I have to say about it.
Okay.
Well, you know, I think if you talk about Matarossian, the first thing you have to look at is once Canelo was withdrawn from this fight and they recognized that the selling power of the event was gone, the first thing they did was move it to a smaller venue in Vegas. Then it was eventually moved to the StubHub Center in California because that's where Triple G is a good ticket seller. Sells out the arenas over there. Sells out StubHub Center. So then what they did is you bring in Dennis Matarossian, who's a California guy, right? He's Armenian, but he stays in Glendale, California. So he, what they did is they made it so that they could definitely have a sellout at least at the gate and try to recoup some of the money that they lost from the promotion with Canelo. Like Zito says, it's a short notice fight. Vanis Matarossian, and kudos to him for taking the fight and saving us the date. If not for that, we don't have a fight tonight, right? So kudos to Vanis for taking that fight on short notice. And it is what you get. You know, I was reading an article and just reading some comments. You know, one of the things that was brought up was remember back in the 50s and, you know, 40s and 30s and stuff, you know, guys fought obviously more than two times a year as champions do now for the most part. And so, therefore, a guy like Vanis moving up to fight Triple G would just be a non-title fight. So the biggest gripe with the fight is that it is for Triple G's championship. Now, obviously, if Vanis Matarossian were to defeat Triple G tonight, then, you know, he's proven he's at least credible at the 160 level. But with that said, though, this is, you know, to be sanctioned for a title, especially a defense in which he's tying Bernard Hopkins' record, you know, there can be some debate about that. With that said, again, we still get a title fight tonight, 12 rounds of a fight if it goes that far. If this weren't for the titles, if Vanis were active, then, you know, there might be some, you know, some more anticipation to the fight. But it is what it is. And, you know, I think we're all fight fans. That's why we do the show. So we'll be watching.
Hello, everybody.
Hey, Brady.
Hey, Brady.
No. Sounds like Brady, but it's not. We're joined by a person who's a member of a royal family. Has always been called the first family of fighting, who has done a yeoman's job of helping her brother get started with a company back, it was about the 80s, was it, Donna?
Yes, late 80s.
Yeah. The daughter of the famous Lou Duva. This is Donna,
Duva. Oh, my God, you sound just like Brady, Donna.
Brady? Okay.
Yeah, Brady's young. That's such a compliment. You sound like you're a teenager to us. That's so good.
Oh, yeah. I'm a teenager at heart. Okay.
That is.
What's going on, guys?
Hello. How's it going?
We are so happy that you're coming back into the arena. It's probably a lot of work for you.
Not really. You know what? It's not really a lot of work. I could do it in my sleep, probably. I've been doing
it
for
so long.
Well,
you worked with guys like, Evander Holyfield and Lennox Lewis.
Pernell Whitaker, Melvin Taylor.
Yeah.
Arturo Gotti.
Yeah.
And, you worked with
Mike
a lot
McCallum.
Of big names.
Yeah, you know.
Right.
A lot of them, yeah.
Growing up, because Holyfield was like my favorite fighter at that time, Lou Duva was my favorite trainer, always was. Just because of the guys he had underneath him. He was my absolute favorite trainer growing up.
Why, thank you. Yeah, Holyfield was always my favorite fighter, too.
Cool.
There were better fighters, like Pernell Whitaker was probably technically the best.
Yeah.
But he used to make me crazy because he used to look like he was so... it was so effortless for him. And I think we did a one time he hadn't got hit with a punch in, like, I don't know, 20 fights or something. Nobody was able to hit him because he had such good moves. But sometimes he was boring watching them sometimes. not like Evander, you know. You never knew it was going to happen.
I just want to ask a quick question, about your father and his training. You know, you mentioned, you know, Evander Holyfield and Sweet Pea Whitaker. Those are two different styles altogether. And you can see the fundamental training that Evander Holyfield has. With Pernell Whitaker's doing a lot of it's guy-given. Does that drive, did that drive your father crazy that, you know, Pernell Whitaker will roll off but not bring his hands up or stuff like that? Did that used to kill your father?
Sometimes. I remember one time he was fighting Diabelus Hurtado in Atlantic City.
Oh, I remember that right now.
And if he won, he was going to fight Oscar De La Hoya, who happened to be in the audience. I think it was at Boardwalk Hall. But anyway, he was losing the fight because he was getting lazy. And they told him in the corner at the end of the 10th round, they said, "You're losing this fight." He said, "Get out of here. I'm not losing." They said, "You got to knock him out. You're losing the fight." So he went out the next round and hit him, and he knocked him out.
Is that the round where he clubbed him with the repeated left hands, if I'm correct?
I don't remember what it was, what kind of punches, but he just went out and stopped him. He said, "No."
Yep.
He said, "No, I want that De La Hoya fight." So they were all going crazy. The corner men were going nuts, but he was fine.
Yeah, I think one of the best quotes I've ever heard in my life is your late brother. When Mike Tyson came out of jail, they asked him a question about something about, you think Michael straightened out? And he says he didn't go to Harvard, he went to jail.
Yeah.
I'll never forget that.
My father always had a saying, people used to say, did you used to fight when you were young? And he always used to say, "Do you think I got a face like this from doing ballet?"
Yeah.
They all had their moments.
Donnie,
they were a bunch of characters.
You're working with Thomas LaMotta now, Cornflakes LaMotta, right?
Yes.
He's one of your fighters, and he's got a bout coming
up. No, he's not one of my fighters. They just hired me to be a site coordinator for their shows.
Okay.
I don't promote anymore.
He's finally gotten smart. He did have a somebody, we're not going to mention any names, but he did have somebody that didn't really do much for him.
I told him, I'll do whatever you want. Mm-hmm. Just sit back and relax. His wife is getting ready to have a baby. So the baby's due like a week before the fight. So I said, don't even worry about it. I could do this, my hands tied behind my back.
Sure.
I said,
and that's
just relax,
be,
take care of your wife.
June 1st at the Showboat?
Yes.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Can you give us any background on the fight?
The main event is Jerome. I don't know the names too well. I don't recognize the names, so I'm reading them for you. Jerome Ennis is fighting Mike Arnautis, which should be a good fight.
Mike Arnautis, yeah.
Yeah. Because Arnautis is
I believe.
Yeah, we had him fighting against Demetrius Hopkins, Kendall Holt.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
he's a tough guy. I don't know what he has left, but I guess we'll see. So it'll be the young guy against the veteran. And then there's two New Jersey state titles on the show, a heavyweight one and a junior, super middleweight one. Who's that? Chris Thomas against... Danny Burning. I'm sorry, I just haven't gotten familiar with all these names. I've been out for a long time. And that's a super middleweight title. And then the heavyweight title is Dan... What is that? Pacio against... Cedric Quain, Cedric Fields? No. Let me fight Cedric Fields. He's not fighting Cedric Fields. Who the hell is he fighting? Florida man. Yeah, maybe it's just Cedric Fields. I got to look that up. I think this is wrong.
Okay. No, you be
anyway, it's
going to
be
the,
a good show, though.
Will you be working in the Philadelphia, Atlantic City area, or are you going to do strictly the Atlantic City area, trying to get that back up?
I think he's mostly focused on Atlantic City, so that's where I'll be. If you go to Philadelphia, I'll go to Philadelphia. I love the cheesesteaks there.
Such a stereotype.
Actually, I love the roast beef and privolo sandwich is better.
Oh, you go there, Nick.
I can't remember the name of the place they're from, but my father always used to bring them home.
Yeah, in the Reading Terminal, the Nick's?
I don't know.
Or John.
Oh, yeah, Nick's. Yeah, I think it's Nick's.
Yeah.
Whenever he used to go to a fight to Philadelphia, he used to bring them home. And one time my husband, Tommy, had a fight in Philadelphia. He said, bring me home those roast beef sandwiches. He said... I don't know anything about roast beef sandwiches. I'm from San Diego. I don't know where to get them. I said, hang around with my father. He'll take it where it is. It's been fun.
Donna, who else will you be working with in that area? And can we get any dates that we can maybe plug for you?
No, he doesn't. He didn't have any further dates. He did tell me... Tom, that he's going to be fighting again probably July or August. So I'm assuming that'll be the next show.
Okay.
And my guess will be it'll be Atlantic City again.
Mm-hmm.
He does shows either at the Showboat or the Claridge.
Ah. Yeah. I think the
last one was at the Claridge.
How's the draw for fighting it? I mean, I know it had fallen off there for a while.
They told me that. I wasn't at the last show, but the last one at the Showboat, I think he said they had like 1,700 people, which is great.
That's great.
That is great, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
I don't think it was that much worth Stevie Cunningham's fight at the Lacourse Center, was it, Ty?
No, yeah, I don't know. It was. You know what? No, I don't remember how much it was. Yeah, it was a nice turn. You know, because I remember being there saying, "Man, they should have did this at the 2300." So yeah, that was my thought process. So.
Yeah, I think he draws pretty good, and you know, he's a young kid, but he's. Hold on a minute, Sean. Hold on a minute. I'm watching my grandson. Don't do that. There's a hole over here. The thing can crawl right out. What are you doing? Honey, please.
Okay.
What are you watch my grandson. He took the top off the gerbil cage.
Oh.
Gerbil just took a dive into the bottom.
Not great. Oh, boy.
What? Oh, boy. Don't do that again. But anyway, I started to say, Tom's a young kid. But he seems to be pretty experienced to me as far as promoting shows.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when he asked me to come in, I mean, I've known his father, Vinny, for ages. He always used to work on shows with me, you know, just helping out or whatever, getting me fighters. But his son is, like, completely different from him. Vinny, no offense, but he's, like, a little bit of a wacko. And his son seems completely normal, I guess because he lived with his mother. I don't know. But he seems really experienced. He knows what he's doing.
Great. Donna, we're joined by Dr. Chris Panarello. He was he's a longtime boxing historian and boxer himself, and he was a good friend of your dad's.
Mm-hmm. Hi, how are you?
How are you, Donna? How are you doing?
Good. How you been?
I met your dad way back when we had the USA versus Italy.
Oh, at Ice World?
Tell you that story?
I don't know. He told me a lot of stories.
Well,
which
they had the USA
about?
Versus Italy. He wasn't a professional promoter yet. He was still working with local 216, and he booked the international bout at Tottawa.
Yeah, at Ice World it was. I was there.
Yeah, and the premier got kidnapped, and they shipped the Italian team wasn't let out. So we had a group of Italian boys from down around the Wilmington area, and he came down and scouted them, and it turned out to be a great show. And
that was the one where we had an Italian cop there.
Yeah,
we had a fighter. Yeah.
Yeah, everybody was supposedly from some town in Italy.
Yeah, I remember he had one fighter, Giovanni Bavenzi. He was actually from Italy, but not
Johnny,
for the Italian people.
He spoke for the group.
Yeah, he was the only one that spoke Italian, so he did all the talking.
Well, the Italian men were mad because they wanted to talk, and John was the only one. He could speak any dialect.
Right.
So he calmed them all down. It was Giovanni
Bavenzi. My Italian was like pig Latin, so nobody could even understand him.
Yeah.
But
so that was quite a night. Rocky Graziano was there. Drew a maximum crowd, full crowd.
Yeah,
and,
the Ice World shows were good. We a lot of times we had to turn people away.
Marvis Frazier fought. My son fought.
Mm-hmm.
Tabiri, Mario fought. Great show. Great
show. Yeah, they
had
good fights there.
Yeah, and I saw Lou several times after that. And saw him down at the when they honored the Italian athletes and so forth in Philly. And I talked to him again there. He always had a comical,
always had a story to tell.
He said, he always liked that story. Never forgot my son. He saw my son sitting in the audience. He come over and got him. He said, Chris, what are you doing? My son was quite surprised that he recognized him. It's been about 3 or 4 years.
No, he was very personable.
We had a lot of fun.
Big personality.
He was good. Yeah, he was good friends with Carmen Graziano.
Yeah.
And that night Carmen was so excited, he had a little stroke, a mini stroke.
Oh God.
And when we got home, he didn't know where he was.
Jeez.
He had no idea how to get home or anything. It was a hell of a long day and then a fun day. And then at the end, I said, Carmen, you all right? Yeah, there's nothing wrong with me. I said, you don't even know your way home. You want me to, I'll be all right. Carmen treated himself. He was his own doctor.
They all thought they were.
They don't listen to anybody.
No.
You know?
No. Even my husband, I always argue with because he was a fighter, then he became a trainer. And he'll always tell me, you better go to the doctor. You better go to the doctor, get that checked out. But you can't tell him to go to the doctor and get it checked out because, it don't work that way.
It's a man
thing.
I don't know why people do that. They're ill, and they don't want to go to the doctors.
Yeah, his saying is you got to be tough in this game rather than go to the doctors. Yeah, you got to be tough in this game. I said, you'd rather die than go to the doctor? They just don't make any sense.
And they'll do it. They'll do it. My son had two friends die in their 40s. They wouldn't go to the doctors.
Really?
And they never made it to 50.
Jeez.
So stubborn, Jesus, God. So
what's
going on
the
fight game?
I don't know about you, man.
That's right.
How do you enjoy the fight game?
I always enjoyed it. Then I think I got I was in it for like 25 years, and, you know, like fighters get burnt out, trainers get burnt out. I think I just got burnt out. There were several reasons, and I just decided to step away and take a break.
Mm-hmm. Not a bad idea if
no.
you can do it.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, my husband Tommy Brooks.
Everybody.
Was, my husband Tommy Brooks was making good money training Holyfield and Tyson and everybody else, so I decided to take a break.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Tommy Brooks is the top trainer. So, if you guys don't remember, Tommy Brooks was a top trainer. Yeah. So.
Yeah, he still is. He's actually in China training the Chinese amateurs for the Olympics.
Is he? You know what? It's funny. I always wonder what happened to Tommy Brooks.
That's yeah, no. He went,
wow,
he went
awesome.
There about 2 years ago. He just goes back and forth. And that's where he is. He was home in April for 2 weeks. And I may go to China after the fight in Atlantic City. I don't know.
Nice.
Nice. I haven't been there yet.
Yeah.
I don't know.
You know, it's getting to the Hall of Fame ain't calling for you guys.
Huh?
That's right.
I said it's getting to the point where the Hall of Fame may be calling for you guys.
Yeah.
Not me. That's my husband's thing, my father's thing. Mm-hmm. I'm already in the Hall of Fame in New Jersey, and so is my husband. But
nice.
You know, the international one, that's for him, not me.
Mm-hmm. Donna, do you have anything lined up after Tommy fights in June?
No, he hasn't given me what the next date is.
Okay.
But I'm just going to strictly work for him. I'm not going to do anything else.
Oh, okay.
That
makes sense.
Yeah, I mean.
And his mom and dad are still working with him, right?
Yes.
Okay.
They all have their.
Go ahead.
Hmm? No,
go
I was going to say they all have their own designated jobs.
Good.
Sort of just like going to oversee everything, fix up any screw ups that happen. But. And they always do.
Yeah.
But, no, I'm not doing anything else.
Do you have a matchmaker that you work with?
Yeah, Chris Mittendorf does the matches.
Okay.
Out of Baltimore.
Okay, good.
And they have another guy, Caesar, I think Ramirez, I can't remember his last name. I haven't actually met him yet. I spoke to him, but I haven't actually met him. But Chris Mittendorf, I've known for a long time. I used to use him as a matchmaker.
Mm-hmm.
And,
excellent.
And I pretty much know everybody. I just have to reacquaint myself with the fighters.
Sure. As soon as I saw it on Fight News that you were back in the game, that's why I gave you you were the first one I called.
Yeah.
Because we really appreciate. Tommy, because we did have him on one time when he was with Peltz Boxing.
Oh, okay.
Maybe, and he's a flashy little fighter. I thought he retired at one point though.
Apparently he retired last August, but then he changed his mind and fought again.
Hey.
In fact, I asked him before because I was doing some research, and I said, "Are you retired?" He said, "No, I'm not retired." He said, "I just took some time off." I said, "Okay."
Nice.
But he's pretty much done everything himself.
Mm-hmm.
His career, the promotion.
Uh-huh.
He's done everything himself. He's a pretty smart kid.
Great. There's not many boxers.
No, I don't know
why
he's in boxing, but
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of guys, you've been around, you know how the boxers are.
Yep.
They just do one thing. He seems to be able to multitask, so.
Nice.
That's good.
That's great. Ty, you have any more questions for Donna? Ty?
Yeah, his phone might have faded out. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, now we can.
Okay, yeah, I was saying, having grown up in the business and also having been in the business yourself for over 20 years, what do you think is the biggest difference between the whole aspect of promoting a fight then as opposed to now, promoting the event then as opposed to now?
I don't think the actual event promotion is any different, What's different is the outlets and the fighters. Before, you know what? In the beginning, when I used to work for in my brother's company, we used to depend on boxers selling tickets. And that's how we made money. Well, we never made money, but we were happy we could go to the diner and buy dinner afterwards. But today, it's hard to build up a fan base with fighters. But on the other hand, also, there was a lot more TV available back then than there is now. Mm-hmm. I mean, when the 1984 Olympians turned pro, Holyfield, Whitaker, Taylor, all those, we had a contract with ABC, NBC, mm-hmm. for all primetime shows, and then they got as they progressed a little more, they went on to Showtime and HBO. The networks, they don't do it that much anymore, if ever.
Yeah.
And the kind of TV deals you get aren't worth spit in plain English, unless you get an HBO or a Showtime show. There's no networks around. If there is, you got to buy the advertisement to support the show and to make money. It's a totally different boxing scene. That's what I think is different. And you know what? The fighters back then, they would fight anybody you put in front of them. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't want to fight him, but I need this much money, I need that much money.
Mm-hmm.
It's totally different. Like Pernell Whitaker never used to ask who he was even going to fight. He used to say, tell me when to show up, and I'll be there. And that was the mindset of the guys, and not just them. Almost every fighter that I met, they all had the same mindset.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what changed. I think a lot of them got spoiled. People used to put them on retainers, give them monthly fees, and they got lazy. I don't know what the other explanation could be. They just don't have the heart that fighters used to have.
The fighters now, they're watching the other athletes, and they got these agents. The agents.
They got the agents. They got managers. They got lawyers.
They got everything. It's a whole different ball game. They're more protected. They're more interested in knowing what they're doing, who's doing it for them, and why, and how much.
Yeah.
Because they only get one shot at it, and they want to make it right. They want to do it right.
I understand that, but you know what? All the guys back then, they all did it right too. But you know what?
Yeah.
Back then, people trusted people. I don't think they do anymore. I really don't think they do. And like my husband always says, this is a business. I understand it's a business. But you know what? You have to have trust in somebody. You always have to trust somebody to have your back, whether it's your manager, they have advisors now, your trainer. Whoever it is, you have to trust somebody. It's not all black and white anymore. But you know what? That's the way it is. I mean, it's not that way anymore. Before it was.
I think part of the problem is and for the good or for the better, I'm not going to debate whether it's better or worse. But mm-hmm. I think a big part of the problem is that fighters are more business oriented now, and they're always looking to protect their brand. You know what I mean? Whereas opposed to, back in the days I was really coming up as a kid watching fighting and boxing, the brand was in being the best in the world, right? Now the brand sometimes is about trying to capitalize and be it titles, jumps in weight classes, through the least path of resistance, right? It's not necessarily about being the best in the world. It's about having so many accolades to be able to market yourself as one of the best in the world, as opposed to actually being the best in the world. So I just think because the business model is prevalent, the product we actually see in the ring has degraded, in my opinion, because the business model is so prevalent.
I agree. Look, there's nothing wrong with treating it like a business, but you know what? you're in the fight game. You're not a Wall Street banker. You have to realize what you're doing. And if you don't know the ins and outs of things, then you have to hire somebody to look for your, to, you know, to watch your back. And sometimes these fighters, they think they can do everything, and they can't. Their, you know, to me, their job is to fight, not to do the contracts and everything. You know, maybe I'm too much old school. I don't know, but they worry about too much. You know, I don't know.
My take is that I think that it's a matter of quantity over quality, to where you want more titles, more wins without the loss.
How many damn titles are there nowadays?
Exactly.
And you know what? They don't mean anything.
To be perfectly honest,
they're just bullshit. That's all they are.
Exactly. And I think it hurts because fighters aren't better nowadays. To me, I'm not demeaning any fighter, particular fighter nowadays. I mean, just overall, the fighters nowadays aren't better than the fighters back then.
You think they're better? Is that what you said?
They're not better.
No.
They're not better. Now, they can be, I mean, just because you can go through any sport and you're going to have athletes who are bigger, stronger, faster, you know,
yeah,
than they were
yeah.
in the 70s. You're not going to have that in boxing. Not only because of weight class, but you have guys, as you mentioned, that are fighting, you know, have 100 fights on their resume, 100-something fights on their resume. They're fighting, you know, every three weeks.
And they still can't fight.
I mean, but you get to that. I mean, a lot of stuff, guys act a certain way, you know, when they're a certain level nowadays, to
yeah.
where that old school mentality is the root beer. And it seems like when you get to that upper echelon, it's the phone.
Yeah.
You don't have it's like, you know, it gets a little more hollow. You have to kind of watch yourself, you know, in certain things to
yeah.
where when you're,
I mean,
when you're at the roots, it's you're where you're at. I'm sorry.
Think about the heavyweight division nowadays. How many goddamn heavyweight champions are there? And can any of them fight? I haven't seen any that can fight. Put any of them in with Holyfield, Tyson, Lennox Lewis, and they get knocked out. They
yeah.
get knocked out.
I agree.
I mean, you know, that's my opinion. And
I
could be wrong. Are there good fighters out there? Sure. And you know what? Most of them are from different countries, not from the United States.
Wow.
and they concentrate on technique.
Right.
When you look at it, to be honest, I agree. A lot of what you get in the United States is going to be, oh, that guy looks fast on the heavy bag. He hits, you know, he's quick.
Yeah.
Let's go ahead and develop that aspect of him.
Yeah. My husband just did an interview with somebody from China. He was in China, but they did an interview. And he asked him, you know, who do you think are the best fighters and why? And he said Triple G and Canelo Alvarez. Why? Because they learned their skills. They concentrated on basic skills, and they improved
mm-hmm.
on those basic skills. And that's what got them to where they are. And I agree with him.
Well, you know, I think, too, one thing that gets lost, too, is because of the plethora of titles, it saturates the competition. So, you know, when we talk about – and I think there are plenty of good fighters out today. You know, I don't want to besmirch
yeah,
any
no,
fighter.
No.
I think there are tremendous fighters out today. However – No, I just want to make it clear before the caveat is the rest of the statement. So I just want to make that clear.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they're tremendous fighters today, but I think the reason why the overall pool was better back then is because you couldn't get to the title without fighting the next best guy.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? So the
exactly.
competition was always more stern. Like the resumes, of course, you know, people talk about different times, fighters fight more. But even with that said, just you can't compare the resumes of a titleist today with the resume of a champion back then.
No,
so
you can't, because they always went up one level on their next fight, up one level on their next fight. It was like a constant progression. If they saw in the third fight or fourth fight, well, you know what? He has to work more on his jab. That's what they did, and they worked on the jab, and they went back to the fist fight. They were always looking to improve the boxer's skills. You know what? Some boxers back then didn't have the best skills, but they worked on it and worked on it until they got it good enough where they could go to the next level. And nobody does that anymore.
I love Chris Areola, right? I just love the character he is, and I think he was fun for boxing. However, you know, Chris Areola is a guy who got two title shots, never have defeated a top 10 opponent. So, I mean, that's kind of – so that's why, to me, guys aren't as good, because they're not learning under fire all the time against guys that can push them. If you're not pushed, you're not developing.
I agree.
And that's just my opinion.
I agree. Fighting, to be in plain English, bums, does not do anything to get you to a title. Because when you get to the title shot, you're going to be the bum. You're not going to win.
My
father always used to say – when I fight for a title, I'm going to win that damn title with his fighters. And he was right. You can't take soft touches, because you don't learn that way. You know, you may have a loss along the way, but so what?
I give you a David Haye, who just should basically retire after he just lost to Tony Bellew. David Haye was a unified cruiserweight champion. Moved up and fought Mike Barrett Blockbuster. And then he fought Nikolai Valuev for a heavyweight title. Think about when Holyfield, who was not unified, an undisputed cruiserweight champion, moved up, and he fought guys like Alex Stewart, Michael Dokes. I remember that fight. Wow.
He fought
before he ever fought for a title.
You're right, because when you fight for that title, you're going to win that title. You're not going to fall down. You're not going to, you know, it's not going to be as tough as it has to. It's going to be tougher than it has to be. I don't know. Maybe because I grew up with trainers, with my father and my husband. I don't know. That's the way I think.
Who was the most lively character you've ever run into?
The who?
The most lively, entertaining character you've ever run into.
A boxer?
Any character in the game.
Oh, there's a lot of them. I got to think about that a second. You know what? For as laid back as Pernell Whitaker was in the ring, he was crazy outside the ring. I don't mean lately, but I mean before when he was fighting good. He was just crazy. He was always telling jokes. Johnny Bumpus, the same thing. Him and Rocky Lockridge.
Bump City.
Him and Rocky Lockridge, they were like best friends. They lived down in South Jersey. They were like a comedy team. They were like Abbott and Costello with their jokes and everything else. They were they were pretty crazy, too. I don't know. There was a lot of wild guys in boxing, a lot of wild people. But I think I blocked out most of them.
Wow.
I don't know.
Chris, do you have another question for Donna?
No, not really. I'm just sitting listening to her.
Yep.
She and I could get into a lot of arguments, I can tell right now.
Oh, no. You know what? It's funny you should say that, because my father always used to say, don't pick on her because she's just like me, and you'll sit there and argue with her for hours.
We would tangle before the night was out. We'd be hitting each other.
Nah.
You know?
Nah.
Well, I'm only joking about that, but I had.
My husband says I have a good right hook, so I don't know.
Oh.
I don't know if you want to get into that.
No, you know what? You know what it is. You grew up in a different era.
Yeah.
I'm a lot older than you. And you
I don't know about that.
I'm a lot older.
Really? How old are you?
82.
Oh, okay, you are.
I brought you to a stop. I
so
won
were,
that one.
You were like the
I knew you were
Martiano
going to say
era.
Yeah, I was. I grew up in the 40s, 50s. I've been watching fights since I was 6 years old, 5 years old with my dad, when TV first came out. and I developed a lot of opinions about the sport. I saw it all. I saw it all happen. I knew a lot of the men personally, and it was a different era, a whole different ball game, and you would have enjoyed it. It was a more comical, fun sport back in those days.
Yeah,
the characters were unbelievable, and
yeah,
it was
you know
fun
what?
To be around them.
Towards the end of me in boxing, it wasn't fun anymore. It just wasn't fun.
Yeah, I could see that happening. It's a whole different sport. The fighters don't want to fight as often as they did because they're protecting themselves more than they ever did in their life. You know, they're worried about themselves. They're trying to extend their careers. You know, 15 fights are fighting for a title.
Yeah.
Back in the day, LaMotta had 125 fights before he got a title shot.
I agree with you.
Willie Pep had 7, you know. I mean, it was a whole different era.
Yeah.
You know, and it's the fighters finally started trying to take care of themselves because even now, even today, 20 years ago, not that long ago, really, 20 years ago, 25 years ago, they would fight, they would make all kind of money. Next thing you know, they're dead broke, they're down and out. They never took care. They didn't take advice well.
I agree with you. Hey, Holyfield was bankrupt. Tyson was bankrupt. I don't know how many other people are bankrupt, but they just didn't watch what they were doing, and they had nobody protecting them.
Well, Don King was had his hand in Tyson's pocket, and that's why it was empty all the time. Your brother had the quarter of the year way back. It was voted the quarter of the year in sports.
What's
somebody
that?
Asked him when Tyson, Danny. Somebody said, "Hey, Dan," he said, do you think Tyson will be any smarter when he comes back?" He goes, "Why? He didn't go to Harvard. He went to prison. Why do you think he'll be smarter? You know?"
Yeah.
And
sure
enough, he did the same damn things right over again. Don King had power of attorney for him,
and they never learned.
I had friends that used to go to work at the Sinclair Oil Refinery. They'd have a 10-round fight at Wilkes-Barre. They jump in a car at 4:00, drive to Wilkes-Barre, fight 10 rounds, you know, for $150.
Yeah,
and then come back the same damn night. Never even had enough money to stay up there.
Yeah.
I mean, the sport is different because, thank God, you know, it's the fighters are more protected now than they ever were.
I'll never
forget Jake LaMotta's statement at the fight when Hagler was fighting Duran. He said, "Jesus, these guys are getting $10 million to fight." He said, "I fought my whole life, 150 some fights." He said, "I didn't make $10 million in my whole career. I'd up every purse." He said, "And these guys are getting in one." And he said, "They're not half the fighters that we were."
Yeah.
So I went down. I was kidding Jake. I said, "Hey, Jake, Hagler would have given you a hard time at the peak of your career." Well, he got mad at me, and we started arguing. It was a fun
argument.
Jake LaMotta.
You know? We almost got thrown out of the fight because...
It was
Jake LaMotta fighting at the announcer's booth.
I went down. Jake would. He gave you a hard time and your peak. You had your hands full. I'll come out of this thing here. I'll kick your ass. He told me. He said, "Come on out."
Tell you what, those old timers never lost their fighting spirit though. Even my father, he was 93 years old when he died, and he would get in a fight in the drop of a hat.
Well, that's the truth. That's the truth. But Jake, he was telling the truth. He was his own manager. He never had a manager. And he never paid sparring partners. He made his brother was a sparring partner. That's why he fought in Detroit against the toughest guys in the world.
Yeah.
Nobody would go out there to fight him, you know, and he, that's why he fought Robinson so often. Nobody would fight him, so
better.
Jake fought him like six times.
Uh-huh.
And his, gave Robinson his first loss in Detroit. But I think it's for the fighters now. They're better taken care of, and they're not fighting as often, and it's showing on them when you meet them years later. I mean, I met the old time fighters that fought in the '20s. Wow, you know, you the cauliflower ears
and
flat, you know, that was a whole different ball. You don't see that anymore. You have to go to the MMA to see what the old fighters look like.
Well, Holyfield only has part of an ear.
Jesus, boy, we could go on about that.
I think they actually slowed it back on, if I'm not mistaken. But, you know,
Donna,
it's just a lot
really
different.
You're giving us your time. I know that I personally am happy to see you back into the game. And if there's any time we can promote a show for you on the air, please send me an email, give me a phone call, anything. And we'd love to have you back after Thomas has his fight in June, on June 1st.
No, he's not fighting. He's not fighting.
Oh, he isn't? Oh, who is it you have on the 1st?
We have one on the 1st, but he's not fighting. His wife is, they're awaiting the birth of their first child.
Okay.
So he's not fighting.
So the thing with
the show is going on, but... Hmm?
He had a fight with Ennis, Boots Ennis, Jaron Boots Ennis?
No, he wasn't fighting him. Ennis is fighting Arnutis.
Oh, okay.
No, Tommy was never on the show.
Good. All right. Well, we appreciate
taking
your time.
A break.
And look forward to having you back again very shortly. I'll be, you know, I have your number. I'll be calling.
whenever. Okay. Thanks for calling.
Thanks, man.
This was extremely enjoyable.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much for your time.
Okay.
Did you get it? Well, let's see. We went through Triple G. Ty, what do you think? Big Baby Miller pounded the hell out of Johan Dufas for 12 rounds to get the WBA title. What do you think of that fight?
I thought it kind of went exactly how I thought it would go. I thought Duapai would – he's just not quite that level, and I thought that Big Baby Miller would be a little bit too aggressive for him, too active, too much activity. I also felt that for Big Baby, that was an audition, a successful audition for a potential Joshua fight, because what it does, it would allow Joshua to come get a fight in the States, which obviously would increase his marketability, a potential – eventually for U.S. pay-per-view dollars. And you know what? Honestly, to me, it makes Big Baby, in my opinion, presents a relatively safer opponent for Joshua. So, you know, I think from that standpoint, he did pretty well. Was I impressed as looking at a guy who is a world beater at heavyweight? No, I think he's a guy because of his activity and his toughness. He could be a tough night for a lot of guys, but he's a guy who's just a couple tiers below, in my opinion.
Okay. Go ahead.
I'm you know what? Big Baby, look, I'm going to agree with Ty in the fact that it was nothing new. He looked good. And every time I see Big Baby, I say, he looks good. But he's not complete. And to be honest, I think his weight hurts him from being complete. I think he's over 300 pounds. He's 6'4". So, I mean, I my thing is this. He has too much weight to turn his punches over all the time. So he slaps with his punches, takes power away. He's a quick guy. I mean, for 300-something pounds, I mean, for any pounds, he's a quick heavyweight. But he could be that much quicker with a couple of pounds shed off. He's punching for, excess amount of rounds for the whole duration of the fight. But what's the effectiveness of the punches? And then what's going to happen when a guy's using his feet with range? And he has to chase that all night. A guy's not sitting in his face. He's not able to slip and bob and get those punch angles off against a guy who's right there trying to get at him, or trying to stay away from him. He's going to have to deal with these things in a heavyweight division. Right now, he needs to sharpen his game up to deal with these things, because at the moment, his name is going to get him in a place where his body is not going to be able to handle.
Exactly.
In my
Chris, what do you think?
Which, for if I'm Eddie Hearn as a promoter, it's the perfect opponent for a Joshua.
Hey guys, I got to tell you, are we talking about baby? I call him Baby Beluga. You know what a beluga is? A small whale.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
And I watched him fight that Polish guy. Are we talking? Wasn't that recent?
Yeah.
That was an awful fight, guys. When are they going to get him an opponent that doesn't take naps in the middle of a round?
Yeah.
They both took time off. They didn't want to fight. I mean, they would. I just thought it was an awful fight, and I thought he was fighting awful opponents. I didn't like that. Other than that guy, actually, he had a good chin, that guy that he fought, but he wasn't. Mm-hmm. He didn't go all at it. He didn't. Took a lot of time, you know, like I say, he took a lot of time in between punches, and he would loaf, and then baby loved that because he likes to loaf. I don't think he's a 10 round. I don't think he's a good fighter, and if he could pull off a title shot, that's going to be one of the great feats of all times, selling himself to think he belongs in a ring with Joshua. I just don't see it. I mean, he's got to fight a really big, tough, good heavyweight, you know, one of the top five. And then if he does any good against them, you know, okay, maybe he could fight Joshua or one of the top guys. But I don't see it. I don't see the talent. He's awful slow. He doesn't punch. He's not busy enough. I think that he's overrated. I think, you know, like I say, I don't think much of him, and I don't think Joshua loses any sleep over him at all. You know, knowing he's out there, he's too heavy, slow. If he has to fight all out, he'll be half dead by the seventh round if somebody pressed him. You know,
he'd
have to have oxygen in a corner. They'd have a mask on his face. Give him some oxygen to get him the hell out for the next round. I mean, he's just not in condition. He's not fast enough, and he's too slow. So I don't see him fight. I don't see him. You could say, oh, yeah, I want a title shot. I'm winning. I'm undefeated. Christ, he fought the graveyard. You know, guys are coming out of the graves. You know?
And that's kind of where we're at today. He could very well be Joshua's very next. If Joshua and Wilder don't sign, he could very well be Joshua's next opponent. And part of the reason being
that's unbelievable.
Know, again,
that's unbelievable if he's Joshua's next opponent.
Two guys with fists could hurt each other, but. As a promoter, Eddie Hearn is thinking, you know what, this is a guy who can sell a fight because he's articulate, he's got a good story, and he's a guy who, you know, who's a safe debut as we step onto America. So that's why that's been bandied about, because it's not a dangerous fight at this stage for Joshua. He could make for a fun fight, but as is, He doesn't really, to me, give himself anywhere near the best chance of winning a fight with those guys.
It'll be a good fight for Joshua, but even promotion wise, I think it'd be a better fight for Dillon White for Eddie Hearn. Just simple as this. I mean, you could feed him as fodder to Joshua, but Joshua take care of that mandatory right now. I think that's more.
Well,
you know.
that is the thing, though. Is apparently Povetkin is supposed to be the mandatory, but somehow Big Baby Miller, kind of like the same thing with Dominic Brazil over on that side. somehow Big Baby Miller has been elevated to being one of his mandatories. So I believe it does fulfill. It can be made to fulfill a mandatory, if I'm correct. So this is where we're at in boxing.
Talk to Joshua, because all of a sudden Tyson Fury's opening his big mouth and saying it's a very sad situation that Anthony Joshua would only offer $50 million to fight Deontay Wilder. I don't know if that was good prior to his loss, or does that? I wonder if that's still in effect. But there's no reason for him to be pissed off.
Well, you know, Tyson's just bringing attention to himself, and part of the reason why is because he's back in training. I believe he has a date, and I saw some footage of him training, and he doesn't look bad. I mean, he has slimmed up, and he looks quick. You know, that's one thing about him. He was just hitting the mitts, but he looked quick and light on his feet.
Mm-hmm. Chris?
I don't see it, guys.
You say Tyson Fury.
I'm sorry,
quick,
I just don't see
it. There it is.
I don't see it. I just don't. His last two opponents were horrible fighters.
Yeah.
You can't get a title shot fighting guys that they, you know, dig up somewhere in Poland, and that other guy, I don't know where the hell he came from. Probably, big Russian or whatever he was. They're two horrible opponents. I just don't see him getting a shot. The only danger is that Joshua might get arrested for murder. You know, if he pops him around a ring. You know, it's the only reason why Joshua wouldn't want to fight him. He doesn't want to kill anybody. But, Christ, I mean, he's easy to hit. And he can't fight 3 minutes of every round.
No.
As you can see his punches coming. I mean, I don't see it. I just don't see it. I can't get excited about him. A lot more better heavyweights around than him. Something coming up.
The thing is, Dr. Chris, I understand exactly what you're saying, and I agree with you, but that's not the way things are. That's not the way boxing's promoted. Roy Jones fought an on-duty police officer, New York cop.
Yeah, he did.
This isn't anything new. You're going to have these times to where guys, you know, really don't deserve the title shot, but they have a name or they're just in the right place in the right time. And, they, you know, who knows? It could be that Balboa story.
But what Miller presents for Eddie Hearn is a chance for Joshua to get into the American market, to the United States market, a safe choice where you expect Joshua to beat the guy, and you don't risk the big money with Deontay Wilder, which is why they constantly talk about Big Baby Miller as an opponent for Joshua, even though it's clearly, you know, he's clearly, as you know, right now as a professional boxing athlete, he's not deserving. But that's why, because he isn't deserving. That's exactly why they would give him the shot. That's exactly why. That's where we're at in the game, unfortunately.
Yeah. That's what they do. That's some of the times that's what we're going to have. Golovkin's fighting Matarossian. Short notice, but he's fighting Matarossian. So it's, I mean, that's sometimes
Sergey Derevyanchenko, who was Golovkin's IBF mandatory a month ago, asked for that fight. Lucabella went and actually filed a lawsuit to try to make that fight happen, stating that if Gennady Golovkin fought anyone other than Sergey Derevyanchenko on May 5th after pulled out, that he should be the title. Golovkin's fighting Vanes Matarossian. Golovkin is this Iron Man who was always avoided, but he didn't want to take a fight with a guy like Sergey Derevyanchenko. I would favor Golovkin to beat him, but a guy who has a very good chance to beat Golovkin didn't want to take that fight and risk losing the Canelo money. So tonight we get Vanes Matarossian. So, again, that's what happens with boxing. You know, it's great that fighters empower themselves, but what happens is sometimes the business comes before the sport. So if in, say, October or September, we're seeing Joshua sitting across the ring from Big Baby Miller, but they're telling us that Deontay Wilder and Joshua are going to fight in January or February or May. That's the way the sport goes.
Well, guys, we're just up against our time limit here. Chris, I appreciate your coming on and all that you did for the show tonight.
Kathy Duva, she's a trip, isn't she?
Yeah.
If she and I sat down, I guarantee you we'd be arguing like hell. A nice argument, you know. But I guarantee you, I treat her like a daughter, you know.
Oh yeah.
But I got a kick out of her. I hope she didn't take it the wrong way.
No.
But,
oh no.
You know, what I'm getting at is she's got an opinion about a lot of things that there's a lot of room for error. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And, but anyway, it was good talking to her. She, you know, not like her sister, but there's probably a reason why. You know. So, I know when I told her I was 82, she didn't want to argue with me anymore. You know, she didn't know how to give up her age. She didn't want to give up her age.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, I'll see you next week, guys.
All right, take it easy, Dr.
All right.
Thanks.
All right, take care, guys. Bye.
Ty, you want to lead us out?
Hey, it's been a great show. It was great having Donna Duva on, as well as always a pleasure talking to Dr. Chris, Butch, Zito. Bob is our co-pilot, and I look forward to seeing everyone and talking to everyone next week. Z.
Wonderful show, another wonderful show. I want to thank Donna Duva. I want to thank Dr. Chris. These shows are definitely a memory of Bob. If anyone wants to hear any fighting words, please do call. Butch?
I want to thank you guys for both coming on and, every week and making the show the success that it has been. Chris is always there for not only is there for the historia fact, he's also there for the for the comedy fact and does a good job on both. So I appreciate everything. Ladies and gentlemen, these programs are brought to you each and every night of the week in grateful appreciation to the men and women of the United States Armed Forces, the men and women police and fire services. When you're out there and you see somebody in a uniform, please let them know that you know they're there. A handshake, a wink, anything would do. The best thing you can say is, be safe, my brother or my sister. These programs are dedicated to those who lost their lives in the line of duty. Deputy Robert Anthony Carroll, Patrolman David Curtis, Patrolman Jeffrey Colcap, Sergeant Thomas Bainter, Patrolman Jeffrey Yazowitz, Detective Randy Bell, Detective Ricky Childers, San Diego Officer Mike Hendler, Lieutenant Mike Zerbit, Newcastle County Police, Patrolman Anafo Crispin, Lakeland PD, Chief Al Hogel, Longboat Key Police Department, Chief Jimmy Ford, Wilmington Fire Department, Highway Patrolman Alonzo Moses, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Lazaro, Philadelphia Highway Patrol, Highway Patrolman Brian Murphy, Plymouth Township PA, Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Bob Neary, Philadelphia Fire Department, Sergeant Mike Wilson, Charlotte County Sheriff's Office, Deputy Chief Mike Godwin, Philadelphia Fire Department, Deputy Jonathan Scott Pine, Orange County Sheriff's Office, Patrolman Robert Germain, Windermere, Florida Police Department, Trooper Chelsea Richards, Florida Highway Patrol, Lieutenant Joyce Craig Lewis, Philadelphia Fire Department, Patrolman Charlie Condit, Tarpon Springs Police Department, Hillsborough County Deputy Sheriff Charlie Kotloff, Delaware State Police Trooper Sergeant Rodney Bond, Captain Chris Leach, Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Jerry Ficus, Wilmington Fire Department, Lieutenant Artis Hope, Wilmington Fire Department, FDLE Special Inspector Benigno Lacia, Delaware State Trooper Stephen Ballard, Kissimmee Patrol Officer Matt Baxter, Kissimmee Sergeant Sam Howard, and Captain Matt Letourneau, Philadelphia Fire Department. My brothers and sisters, you may be 10-7 at this point in time. At some time we'll be 10-10 at the table of the Lord. Until that time, may the rose rise up to meet you. May the winds be always at your back. May the rains fall softly on your fields, and the sunshine lightly on your face. Until we meet again, may the good Lord keep you and your families always in the hollow of his hands. And if we could just ask for one special favor again from all our listeners, to keep a good thought for Coach Mel. And say a prayer if you have.
Shemalek ma'ilama Shemahezahilma Sona shenevoratfet Hakuigge
1999's responded to his last emergency. May God rest his soul. Love you and we miss you.